Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again today. And before we get started, I want to remind you that just because we talk about a certain tax strategy or two, or we talk about a private real estate partnership opportunity, that you should never, ever, ever go run headlong into whatever you thought you heard without checking with your existing advisors, who presumably are in touch or in tune with your unique facts and circumstances to make sure that it makes sense for you to participate in said project or strategy. And for those of you that say, well, you know, I have a CPA or I have a real estate mentor or investment advisor, and but I'm not sure they understand the combination of real estate taxation, retirement plan planning and taxation, and using your retirement funds in private real estate partnerships, or perhaps they're not able to advise you on zero tax mass strategies. You know, we all should be striving to get into a zero tax bracket by retirement age. And when I say zero tax bracket, there is no zero tax bracket. So for those of you that run to the Internal Revenue Code and look up the brackets, you're going to say, aha, he's misleading us. But what I'm suggesting is there is a way to get your tax rate down to zero. And it doesn't mean that you don't have any income. It means you have the right kind of income. And, you know, it's not pension income. For those of you that have pension plans, or you've got significant RMDs, which would be required minimum distributions out of your 401k or IRA, it's very difficult to get you down to the zero tax rate without planning. If we plan, it is possible in many cases, and but you need to start now. You can't wait till retirement age or to RMD age and then complain because, oh, you can't get down low enough into those what we call provisional tax brackets. And as you may know, or maybe you've had an accountant or two in the past that explained it to you, but there's a certain level of income that we all can offset with a standard deduction. And that's a deduction in lieu of the itemized deductions. That would be detailed itemized deductions. So we're handed a certain amount. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but if I recall, the married filing joint over age 65 level is somewhere around $28,000. So there's $28,000 that right off the bat you can earn without paying without paying any tax. You'll pay zero tax. And then for those of you that have taken the action that we talk about almost on every show, in fact, if you go to our BAPlanner.com website to the show link, you'll see our podcast, which we put every radio show we do goes on that podcast page. And Amy, my associate that sets that up for me each week, complains about how many times I have her put a tag out there for Roth conversion. It's almost every show. Why? Because it's important right now. It's critical. If you don't want to pay tax when you get into the retirement portion of your life, get converted over to a Roth. And it's not just the income tax that you're going to avoid. You're going to avoid the IRMA premiums that you will pay if your income is too high. And you'd be surprised how just the required minimum distributions, depending on what you have in your 401k or your IRAs, can cause you to exceed the level where you will pay tax for your Medicare premiums. Maybe you don't think of it as a tax. Maybe I shouldn't call it a tax, but you're going to write a check. It's going to come out of your back pocket and go to the government because you make too much money under the rules for the government paying for your Medicare cost. The other item that you will not pay tax on, and this is huge, especially with today's advanced life expectancy, with the current medical technology and medicines, all of our lives are effectively extended. And for males, the IRS life expectancy tables show 85 to 86 years old that we'll live to. It's a long time compared to what it was, you know, 20 and 30 years ago even. And females are 87 to 88. And that's a long time. If you're sitting here at, you know, 55, 60 years old, that's a lot of dollars that need to come in for you to pay your taxes if you didn't do what I suggest, which is get converted over to Roth now while the tax brackets are at the lowest point, almost the lowest point in my 64-year-old lifetime. I think it would be more correct to say that since I was age 3 or 4, there hasn't been a lower tax bracket. So if you want to win on this tax train that's coming down, barreling down the tracks at us, where the tax rates will go up, there's no ands, ifs, or buts. And I know all you people, including some of my CPA brothers and sisters, that say, oh, we've been hearing that since the Tax Reform Act of 1986. I remember that was the first major tax act that I dealt with as a young CPA. I guess I should count 2002 and 3's tax acts as well. But the Tax Reform Act of 86, you may remember it was Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill reaching across the aisle to agree on basically decimating the real estate industry. They didn't call it that, but that's what it did. And in any event, that dropped the rates down significantly. That's the brackets, I should say. The actual tax that got collected shot up for a number of reasons, but most important, I guess, is that they, the same time they lowered the brackets, they eliminated much of our deductions. A lot of things went away. Kind of like the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act 2017, a lot of things went away for us business folks, at least. And so in any event, now is the time to start your Roth conversion. It's the tax rates are on sale. Think about it as a sale. And I'm going to tell you, think about it as at least a 50% off sale based on what the math looks like that the tax rates need to go up to. And, you know, again, if you don't believe me, maybe you'll believe the Congressional Budget Office, which back in 2009 was tasked with doing a study for Congress of what Congress needed to do to fix the deficit problem. And folks, that was back when the deficit, and I don't have the number in front of me, but I can tell you that it was no more than probably 40 to 50% of GDP, which that's kind of the water mark, if you will. That's like when you drive down, you go down on some of these intersections in Houston where they have the ruler on the wall so they can see how high at a glance that the water's gotten when we have a good hard rain here and I guess some flash flooding. Well, the GDP, the gross domestic product, is effectively our country's annual output. And to the extent we've borrowed money, it's often compared, the level of borrowing is expressed as a percentage of GDP. So if you look back in time, and I don't have that exact number in front of me, but I'll pull it up on a break here. I want to say we were somewhere in the 40 to 60% range of GDP, which compared to where we're at now was a relative peanut. I think now it depends on which economist and which set of assumptions you want to go with. But we're somewhere in the 130 to 160% range that I've seen bantered about in various articles. That's crazy. I mean, think about that. We owe more than a full year's worth of gross domestic product. It's insane. But in any event, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back momentarily, and we'll pick up here with more on the debt, and we'll take a quick peek at the usdebtclock.org site and see where we're at as of today at 2:20 p.m., real time. We'll circle right back momentarily. Attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I wanna be. Big dreams and fantasies, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
This week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I was just mentioning the debt to GDP ratio, and I popped up Google on my computer here, and let's see, I said 2009, so that was back when the CBO provided the Honorable Paul Ryan, who at the time was Speaker of the House, said, "Dear Mr. Ryan," and they proceeded to give the direction, on the amount that the tax brackets would need to be raised to solve the deficit problem. And in 2009, I was off a bit. It was worse than I thought. In 2009, the U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio was 75.84%. This was an increase of 12.03% from 2008, when the ratio was 63.82. The U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio has been above 77% since 2009, following the financial crisis that began in 2007. So it's, you know, now up again. It's at least doubled since then. But here's what CBO said. There's a couple of things. First of all, they projected that we wouldn't cross the 100% threshold, 100% of debt to GDP, until approximately the year 2000, I believe it was 40 or 2042, and we hit it, I don't know, two or three years ago. So much for good intentions. In other words, things are getting worse faster than we thought. In any event, the brackets, they said at that time we had a 10, 15, and I believe 39, or 39.8 maybe, or 39 rather, were the three brackets. They said the 10% bracket would need to go up to 25%. The 25% bracket would need to go to 63%. And the 39 would need to scale up to 88%. Those are 150% of what the brackets were. And that was in 2009. Now, if you listen to assorted economists and people like the former U.S. Comptroller David Walker, who served under, I believe, Clinton and Bush Sr., if I believe I've got the history right, he has made a movie, you can get it out on Netflix, called The Tax Train is Coming. And currently, I heard him interviewed recently on a podcast. You can easily find it if you'll Google David Walker deficit. And he's saying that now, instead of 150% increase in each of the tax brackets, you'll have to do 200% if you want to fix the problem. And you know, it's quite a problem. And in fact, I was just pulling up the U.S. debt clock, and we can see what. Let's see, here it is. Had a FaceTime call coming in there. In any event, let's see, where'd my debt clock go? Here it is. So as we sit here, let's see, I've got it on the wrong page. Hang on just a second. Get back to the home page. I drilled down to one of the Time Machine pages. This site is truly remarkable. I mean, first of all, it's got, I don't know, at least 100 or more real-time calculation of assorted debt levels, budget levels, state debt levels, you know, and then they further break it down by the population count, how much per U.S. union worker, how much for the U.S. self-employed owners. It's just an amazing amount of data, and it's incredible that somebody has the goodwill to create this and keep us all in touch. But anyway, Total U.S. national debt as of this second is $34 trillion. And this is just the part we admit to. We don't admit to the $150 trillion that we really owe, because some of that is unfunded. The bulk of it's unfunded. But it does show it here on this side. If you want to keep up with the unfunded portion, it again, according to the U.S. debt clock organization, they show it to be about $100 trillion, 480 some odd billion. Other economists put it higher, but the current part of the deficit that we admit to and that we publish is $34 trillion, almost $800 billion. It's $799 billion, $882 million. I mean, these numbers are so big, it's hard. I'm an accountant, and I have trouble with this many zeros. So anyway, but bottom line is, you know, we talk about this stuff almost every week, and I always come back around to, well, you know, people say, well, Nathan, that's a lot of money, but it's so much money, it really does it really affect me? How what do I do? You know, how can I change the tide? Well, you're not going to change the tide much. I hate to say it, voting won't help you. You know, the Republicans are just as culpable as Democrats. If you look back over the annual deficits and how they got created, in fact, the Republicans, you might argue, have been worse if you look at the amount of debt that gets borrowed during, you know, the respective administrations. excuse me. Get a drink of water here. In any event, the ability for any one of us to control the government spending is obviously nil. You know, you don't have a prayer. So you got to worry about yourself. You got to worry about your own tax situation. And I mentioned Roth conversion. Why? Because we want to do what the wealthy folks do. The wealthy folks don't earn taxable income. Oh, they have cash flow. You know, they may borrow against the stock of their company or borrow on other fronts where the borrowings are not subject to taxation. And I understand that at some point you've got to pay debt back. I get that. And so you're going to have some earnings somewhere along the line, but you may also, or you may have future borrowings to pay the prior borrowings off. But the point is, you got to get your income streams to where they are not taxable. They're non-taxable. They're cash flow streams, but they're coming from things like real estate, which is what we like. There's no other business that you can go start that's exempt effectively, or not exempt. Let's just say it's the income tax is deferred on those income streams. And I hear, you know, assorted real estate mentors and real estate investor programs where you see presentations, and they use the word exempt in most cases. I apologize for using that word. I wish it were exempt. But guess what? It is if you invest with your Roth. And that's what we recommend, because we will kill two or three birds with one stone. If you can roll your existing retirement funds over to a self-directed IRA or a self-directed 401 trust, which is what we use with many of our clients, the self-directed 401 trust is otherwise known as a solo K. That's the marketing term. Does not appear in the Internal Revenue Code, as does a qualified trust created pursuant to Section 401. But if you invest in that self-directed 401 trust, you are truly into the exempt income tax mode. It is the only vehicle of any kind, retirement or non-retirement, that you can invest in real estate, leveraged investment in real estate, and pay no tax. And I mean, even when you take it out, assuming you take out qualified Roth distributions out of your 401. Only entity, only structure is a self-directed 401 trust, i.e. solo K. And some of you that have self-directed IRAs are rocking along thinking you're confident in the notion that, hey, I invested my IRA in real estate, and of course, IRAs are tax exempt, and I hate to rain on your parade and ruin your upcoming weekend, but IRAs are subject to a little tax we call the UDFI tax, the unrelated debt-financed income tax. If you want to go to sleep early tonight, go open the Internal Revenue Code to Section 512 and start reading in Section 512, and you'll be referred. Oh, you'll find out that generally IRAs are exempt, except if there's leverage involved. Well, I'm going to ask you, have you ever purchased a piece of real estate that didn't have a mortgage? And if you did, I'm curious who advised you to do that. That would be a bad use of your investable capital, or I say a bad use. I would tell you that maybe 50% leverage would be a happy sweet spot. But in general, if you invest in real estate, the beauty about investment real estate is the ability to invest the bank's capital, paying the bank a small percentage effectively to use their money, where maybe you're paying them, well, in today's market, you may be paying them, you know, 7% interest. But let's assume that property is returning, I don't know, 20%, 30%, as has been the case often in the recent past. So you're using 80%, if we had a loan that had 80% debt to 20% equity, or I don't know, call it 50%. Let's go extreme. Let's say that, you know, we had a loan where we were only leveraged 50%. That's still 50% of your cost to acquire the property, and you're paying a bank maybe, again, 6 to 7%, if that. You might have been able to assume a 3% rate loan, right? They're still out there. And so leverage is almost assuredly part of every investor's picture when it comes to buying a piece of real estate. And what other business are you able to do that and not pay self-employment tax and income tax on the fruits of that investment? And I'm telling you that with the right structure using retirement funds, you can, you know, achieve cash flows that come out to you. I don't mean tax deferred. I mean tax-free Roth distributions from a self-directed 401 trust, or otherwise known as a solo K, are tax-free on all fronts. The income tax, the unrelated debt finance income tax, so it can have leverage without paying that UDFI tax, unlike the IRAs, including a Roth IRA. A Roth IRA is not tax exempt if there's leverage involved on a piece of real estate. And again, I would be the last to tell you that you should not leverage your real estate. It's the perfect leverage if you don't overdo it, okay? I mean, obviously, I know I had a client once that had 95% leverage all in on some apartment buildings, and let me tell you, you talk about a two-edged sword. When those rates go up, you got a problem. So, you know, leverage, reasonable leverage, where you're borrowing money for the right reason. You're borrowing money to achieve more cash flow. There's nothing wrong with that. So, again, if you are concerned, as I am, about the tax train that's coming barreling down the tracks, and you want to maximize the throughput of your real estate investing, There is no better vehicle if you can qualify, and we'll talk more about that here later on this show perhaps. If you can qualify, that's what you want to roll your money to from your big company 401k. We're also going to talk about how can we do that without quitting our job or being old. Those are the only two choices that your HR department's going to tell you. And we'll tell you another option that if you live here in the great state of Texas, we can help you access your funds, all or part, and roll those into a either a self-directed IRA or 401. And I'll when we come back, I'll tell you how we will try to deal with the UDFI tax if your funds end up in a self-directed IRA. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take another break, and we will come back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that
did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be A Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we were just talking about the prospect of saving a lot of tax dollars by converting over to a Roth with your current pre-tax retirement money. And the example that I'd like to use are the circumstances that I'd like to use, because I see so much of this, is someone that's in their, early 50s to mid 50s that's worked at corporate jobs that has always retirement funds, 401k funds attached to the job. And, you know, they're invested in the market. They often, by the time they come to me, they're tired of hearing or seeing the yo-yo up and down of the stock market changes. And I understand everybody's got a different set of facts and circumstances, and there's no one set of facts and circumstances that is the best for everybody. And I like real estate, but I hear other real estate gurus. In fact, there's some right here on this show or right here on this station that make comments like, you know, real estate is the best business you can be in. It's absolutely the best way to create wealth. And I don't disagree. It's the best for some people. It's not for everyone. And I don't buy the argument that, you know, I see at times where someone attends one of the investment platform, you know, free case study nights, as it were, and they get involved and start buying houses because they've been told, you know, best, what is it, best product, best price will get you a good tenant that'll be in the house forever. And that does happen occasionally, but having bought and sold over 150 single family, I can tell you that there are more non-perfect tenants. There's more what we used to call pink and purple Martians than there are perfect credit tenants. And I only say perfect credit because credit does translate in most cases to credibility. And the pink Martians and the purple Martians, which are the people that pink Martians had some incident happen along the way that damaged their credit. Maybe a child ended up in a hospital or whatever and couldn't pay the bills. The purple Martians are the ones that just routinely don't pay their bills on time or pay their bills at all. And what I'm telling you is you're going to run across all three of those types. And I can tell you in my case, buying houses on the east side of San Antonio where we focused, all we had were different shades of purple Martians. That's what I've said many times. Not exactly true, but I can count maybe on two hands out of, you know, owning, I don't know, we bought and sold maybe 150 properties over the years. We had maybe two hands full of perfect credit tenants. These are the kind of tenants that would take their money and deposit it in our bank account. It was great, you know. And in fact, we pioneered the rent collections program that Ace Cash Express put in place in San Antonio. And I don't know, but what it was for all the cities they operate in. Great program, eliminated the entire proposition that, oh yeah, we mailed the check last week. You know, don't know why it hadn't gotten to you. No, that went away because now you walk into Ace Cash Express, you pay your money, tell them the address, and then they send that money to us overnight, and we know exactly who's paid us and when. There's no arguing over, well, we sent the check last week. So in any event, you know, the single family rental game, the problem with it is that it's tough to consistently make money. And just as soon as you get ahead on a house, you're going to have, you know, a tenant perhaps move out that I don't want to say trashes the house, but let's just say you got to spend another $3,000 or $4,000 to fix it. If you're fixing them perfectly, best product, best price. And so, you know, you take two steps forward and one step back, maybe one step forward, two steps back, worst case. And, you know, it becomes a situation where, you know, if you go back to your mentor, and I've seen this many times in these platforms, and tell them, well, you know, this didn't turn out the way I thought. And of course, there'll always be a reason it was your fault. You didn't do this, you didn't do that, etc. I've never seen a mentor in one of these platforms even begin to explain that, well, you know, we suggest you have significant cash reserves to deal with these repairs. And granted, you may not make much money or cash flow much money once you factor in the repairs that are going to need to be made. And before they tell you, well, you know, you should have pursued the person legally to go after him for the damages, that's like a waste of time. You're going to spend time and money if you have to get an attorney involved. And so in any event, you know, I don't know. I mean, having done both single family and multifamily, I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't even start in the single family market in most situations. Now, there may be situations that make sense for certain reasons. I'm going to leave that to you to decide, or you know, talk to your mentor and see what they might recommend. But I'm going to tell you the multifamily investment is where you probably should spend your money if you have enough to invest in multifamily. And the only thing better than investing your cash, your money market funds, or your stock market funds in multifamily real estate is investing it from your Roth 401, your Roth self-directed 401. Then you've got a lead partner or a sponsor, syndicator, whatever term you'd like to use, that will be running the project. And why do we like that? Well, they find the property, they identify the property, they perform due diligence on the math metrics of the property, so that you determine whether or not it has the potential to return money, both the syndicator and the investors, hopefully primarily the investors. And then you do that through your Roth funds that you've rolled over to the self-directed 401 Roth. That's the best possible spot to be in when it comes to creating additional long-term retirement wealth. And you won't be taxed on taking qualified distributions. I'm not going to get into the qualification rules. We can do that on another show. But, you know, if you typically, if you have the Roth account open for 5 years and you're at least 59 and a half, most distributions are going to be qualified. So you pay no income tax. The distributions that you take do not go in to the IRMA Medicare tax calculation. And further, they don't go in to the pool of dollars that will cause your Social Security to be taxed up to 85%, i.e. the provisional income limit that you can make before you're going to pay tax on your Social Security. So a Roth hits on all three of those cylinders. I'm going to say again, no income tax, no IRMA premium increase because of your Roth distributions, and no Social Security tax because of the distributions. Now, if you got, you know, $80,000 in dividend and interest income or other income, well, okay, you're going to end up paying tax on all that, on all three of those components. But simply from investing in private real estate partnerships, if that's how you choose to create your wealth, that hits on all three cylinders. It's a wonderful way to create wealth, create retirement wealth. So in any event, let me turn that volume down. I'm getting phone calls on my iPad. Anyway, I wanted to take a quick peek at the, well, let's see, I grabbed the wrong report. Hang on just a second. I got my June data in on rental growth rates, absorption, etc. Let's see, where did I put that? Here we go, and let's go into the Houston market comp. I believe, yeah, it's this one. Here we go. Let me blow that up a little bit bigger here. It's always interesting to see these different markets. I probably should pull up San Antonio. I spent the last few days over in San Antonio, and I tell you, you cannot go any direction in that city without seeing a ton of new, all look like all Class A apartments that have gone up, and they're not done. They, I know Q4 of 2023, we indicated that there were going to be 18,000 units delivered into the San Antonio area over the next 12 months. Well, units recently opened were 29,000. That's 110 communities. 29,000 units. And that was be for all of 2023, I believe. But units under construction is 18,616. So there's been more since the report we did December 2023. Proposed for construction is 32,828. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I just realized I pulled up Houston. Okay, start over. So Houston has 29,000 units recently opened, another 18,600 under construction, and then 32,000 proposed for construction. I have a feeling all those 32,000 are not going to get built because the rental growth rate slipped. For the past 12 months, so this would have been through the end of May, 1.5% negative rental growth rate. That's a key number that we look at in terms of when we look at it, potential investments in private real estate partnerships involving multifamily. We're very keen to look at the assumptions that are being deployed in the pro forma data, and rental growth rate is a big one. Occupancy is another big one. The occupancy in Houston as of the end of May is 88.3%. I believe that's down slightly. Let me just check. Let's see. Well, it's down from earlier this year, January, let's say, but it's up from last month, from April, at April 30. Let's see a couple other details. The average price per month, average rental rate is $1,274. Let's see, the size on average is almost 900 square feet. It's 894. Absorption, it's another key number we look at, 13,320. So of the units recently opened, well, it's past 12 months, so it's probably not just from the 29 units recently opened, but 13,000 units, not necessarily new, were absorbed. That's a lot of units. It's not as much as we need to get back to an equilibrium, but, you know, it'll take time. Let's see, the hot areas, the annualized growth, the largest number, let's see, it's the Woodlands and Conroe. Heights is number two, and Sugar Land, Stafford, number three. Interestingly, Dickinson and Galveston is right there with Sugar Land in terms of the growth percentage, 7%. All three of those or four of those sub-markets were at 7% or higher. Let's see. And comparing that to San Antonio, occupancy in San Antonio is 86.5% as of end of May. The price, the average rental rate is $1,188. So what's that? About $1,000? not quite $1,000. I mean, $100 less. I'm sorry. The rental growth rate -4%. It's higher than Houston's decrement, their decline. 5,700 units absorbed. It's not a lot of absorption when they have the numbers coming into the market that they are. But let's see, Dallas, 88% occupancy, similar to Houston. And the rental growth rate in Dallas is declined faster than Houston's. It's -4.2%. They had 16,000 units absorbed over the last 12 months. The rental rate is higher than Houston's, 14.71. And let's see, what else should I mention? Well, I think that's enough of an update. But, you know, the market is not as bad as I think many people thought it was going to be when you back up in time, maybe 6 months to a year. But it's also not not what we want. We need to get the rental growth rates back to where they're in a positive notion, and that's probably only going to happen with more absorption. I mean, we've got to have, you know, the supply get closer, or the demand get closer to the supply. Right now, it's significantly less. Just a reminder of what we do here on the Be a Planner show and in our CPA practice is, you know, we don't recommend specific investments, promoters, syndicators, etc. Rather, we help you analyze, understand the math behind the PPM, the private placement memorandum that's issued on most every one of these opportunities, and the operating agreement, which is the Bible, the operations manual, if you will, for the project. And, you know, it's only by helping you understand the math involved and the ownership structure, including the debt structure, including the waterfalls, or what we call the waterfalls, which are the different distribution tiers that indicate how funds are going to be passed out to the investors, both the passive as well as the lead partner. Will you understand or begin to understand how a specific project will line up with your overall investment objectives? And there's multiple variables there, math metrics that you got to consider to make sure you have an awareness of what's coming if you move forward. Well, we're at the end of the show. Once again, I enjoyed today's show. I'm going to be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSCV, the voice of Texas.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.